Okay, it's a schuss to be here. And on the right here, I was thinking, you know, it's so beautiful. Nashim Tzidkaniyos, that you have this monthly shir. I believe it's a monthly shir. And it's a joint monthly shir, I understand. Nacht is between B'nai Shurin and Beth Abraham, which is so special to have in a community. And in a way, I'm a little bit of a link between those two places. Those very holy kehilos. It's supposed to be in the shul of my Rebbe, Rebbe Neuberger, who I owe so much to. And Rabbi Schreier, the Talmud of mine. So I'm really in between, in a certain sense, I'm a link between B'nai Yeshurun and Beth Abraham, so it's a schus to be here and to prepare for the Heilig Yont of Abba Aleinu L'Toiva. There was a Hasidic Rebbe that was under the weather. His Hasidim thought he seemed very sick. And they called the doctor to come see, to come check him out, to pay a home visit. The doctor comes and runs all different tests and checks into him and takes his temperature, everything you could imagine. And he says to the Rebbe, everything's checking out perfectly. You seem great. You seem great. I can't find any diagnosis. Only a small issue. Your heartbeat. You have somewhat of an irregular heartbeat. It's very, very fast. It's very quick. Your heart is beating very fast. And the Rebbe looks at him, at the doctor, and says to the doctor, do you know what today is? Today's Rosh Chodesh Sivan, as today was here. Today's Rosh Chodesh Sivan, and we're only a few days away from Kabbalas HaTorah, from the Heilig Yont of Shavuos. And you don't expect my heart to beat faster? Of course my heart is beating fast. And each and every one of us, as we prepare for Shavuos, and we start thinking about Shavuos, that's not just thinking about a menu and cheesecake and whatever else Shavuos means to many of us. But Shavuos is a day of Kabbalas HaTorah. The Michtam Eliyahu and many others explain that when it comes to a Yontiv, we're not merely commemorating and celebrating an occasion of the past. We're reliving. We're re-experiencing. That in just a few days, each and every one of us is going to again accept the Torah. Go through Mamon Har Sinai. Go through Kabbalas HaTorah. That occasion that we're here today because of. That moment in time which was God's greatest revelation to B'nai Yisrael. The time when each and every one of us were Nevi'im. Each and every one of us heard HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the first two Dibros, it's explicit Gemara and then the Makos. We heard them straight from Hashem. Every one of us. Every one of our neshama was there. Ves Asher Inenu Po, Imanu Hayom, the Pasuk says, in Parshas Nitzav, and we were all there. Whether we physically remember or it's our spiritual soul that remembers being there, we were there. And we're going to be there again. And our heart should be beating faster these days. That's something very real. But we have to prepare. Because we want to get the most out of that. And we want to walk into Shavuos and walk out inspired. Walk out somewhat of a different person. Walk out somebody who experiences Kabbalas HaTorah. So we have to understand the depth of what we could gain from Shavuos. You know, often it's explained throughout the days of Sfiras HaOmer. We use it as a parable, as a mashal. We're counting every single day in anticipation and excitement to Kabbalas HaTorah, similar to the way one counts to one's chasana. Sure, we've all heard that before. But that mashal, that analogy, is something very, very real. In the Gemara, it's Mishnah, and Tainis, on a pasuk in Shir Hashirim, said Sena, a very famous pasuk, Sena Urena, Benoz Tzion, B'melech Shlomo, Batara Shedlo Imo. That we should see all Beno Sion specifically. The daughters of Sion should go and see the crown that Shlomo HaMelech was crowned by his mother, Biyom Chasunaso, Biyom Simchas Libo, the day of his chasna, the day of his joyful heart. And the Mishnah says, and darshins, What is Yom Chasunasa? The day of his chasuna, that grand day. It wasn't referring to Shlomo or one of his many chasunas, as we know. Yom Chasunasa is a specific chasuna. Yom Chasunasa, the Mishnah says, Zeh Matan Torah. And Matan Torah is a chasuna. Matan Torah is a celebration, is a chasuna with the Eibishter. Very, very real. And that's what we're excited for. That's what we've been counting towards. We have to understand what that means. That's very nice. What does that mean? What does marriage mean? And there are stages. So this is a Gemara, a very famous Gemara. It's a Gemara in Shabbos Daf Peches. I'm sure everyone here has heard this Gemara at some point in our lives. The Gemara in Shabbos Peches says, Kofilim Har Kigigas. It's on a pasuk in Parshas Yisro, Ve'yatzvu B'tachtes Ahar, which loosely translates, it means we were standing by the foot of the mountain, but if translated explicitly, it's Ve'yatzvu B'tachtes Ahar, we were underneath the mountain. So what does Gemara say? Kofilim Har Kigigas. Kadosh Baruch Hu held a mountain on top of us at Har Sinai like a beer vat. But Amar Lehem and said to them, said to each and every one of us, Im atem mekablim Torah mutav, vim lav shom teikvu raschem. If you accept the Torah, great. If not, this is your burial. Shom, there will be your burial. It's a whole other Torah. But basically, HaKadosh Baruch Hu forced us to accept the Torah at Har Sinai. Held a mountain on top of us. Tosos asks the obvious question. We all learned at a very young age that when we stood at Har Sinai, we were very excited. And we said, Nasa v'nishma. We already said, we want the Torah. I'm going to accept it. The Torah makes such a big deal. Gemara is, and we've heard so many different ideas on that beautiful statement of Nasa v'nishma that we borrowed from the Malachim, from the angels. Nasa v'nishma means, I willingly wanted to accept the Torah. So what does it mean God held a mountain on top of us and forced us to accept the Torah? Was it willingly or were we forced? So I want to suggest tonight something very special. As we all know, there are stages of marriage. There's engagement, which is called Kiddushin, Erusin. And there's Nisuin, there's actual marriage. Halachically, in this day and age, we do that all under the chuppah, right? At the schus to be by a chasana last night, of a talmid of mine. And it's so beautiful. When the chasan takes a ring and says, Hariak, Mekadesh, Lib, Bazuk, Zas Moshe, Yisrael, that's halachic kedushin, in front of two witnesses. And then, it's big machlokas in the Gemara, but we paskin basically being under the chuppah, together with the Sheva Brachos, it's Nisuin, it's actual marriage. This is engagement and marriage. Kiddushin and Nisun. And we like in our world as well, just to, when a couple commits to marriage, and a man asks the woman, will you marry me? It's engagement. We call that, this couple's engaged. We have a chasen and kala, we have a l'chaim, we have a vart, and we start planning a wedding, and then we have the actual chasen, we have the actual marriage. Those are two very distinct stages, engagement and marriage. When a couple's dating, and they're quote-unquote falling in love, whatever that means, they'll learn what that means down the road, but they build a relationship and a commitment. They communicate. They become close, hopefully on their way to becoming best friends. There's excitement. There's some love of Ava, that Achtus is Reyes. And they decide they want to get engaged. With so much Simcha in the air. And then they go through that period of engagement and eventually get married. And those are two very different stages. And the truth is, Klal Yisrael went through those stages as well. And there was one stage that actually the Baal Turim explains, the acceptance of the Torah itself, which we could call Nasa v'Nishma, which was willingly and they wanted and they said on their own. The Baal Turim says was Shtar Kedushin. The Torah was a shtar kedushin, was a document of engagement. Nasa v'nishma was engagement. And what is engagement? What happened? Klal Yisrael was in Mitzrayim, and they're slaves for years and years and years, and the Ribbono Shel Olam comes along, and he's just bringing about spectacular miracles. Makkah after Makkah, the splitting of the sea, then they're eventually, they're seeing thunder and hearing lightning, whatever that means. They basically are seeing the Ribbono Shel Olam by their side. They're seeing the Ribbono Shel Olam take care of them. There was such a deep connection of recognition of all that the Ribbono Shel Olam is in their life and all that he will be in their life, and says, I want that. I want this kesher. I want this relationship. I'm enjoying this relationship. Let's get engaged. Nasa ben Ishma, I want that. I want that. And I want this type of relationship, because every couple, when they get engaged, they think that's how it's going to be forever, right? It's going to be all fireworks and excitement and all simcha and all ava. And yeah, a little trial and tribulation once in a while. And Shana Rishona comes along, but that's for another time. We're not going to go there. That's kedushin. It's engagement. Fun, games, enjoyment. But when you get engaged, and if you left it at that without the nesuin, you don't yet have the commitment of marriage. The everyday consistency. The everyday being by each other's side through thick and thin. When it's not so enjoyable. When it's not so exciting. When you're doing the dishes and cleaning the home and have the pressure of the responsibility of supporting a family and sending children to school and to camp and everything that comes along with real life marriage. And even within the relationship. In the most beautiful of couples, to be together 24/7, like you didn't know what it was to wake up next to each other. You know, until I share this with couples all the time, to just to understand, when you're dating and even when you're engaged, Baruch Hashem, anytime you get together, you're able to prepare for that moment. So whether it be just looking in the mirror and brushing one's hair, or whether it be mentally, I can prepare to see my chassid, to see my kala, to see my who I'm going out on the date with, whatever it might be. And suddenly, you're going to sleep next to each other, you're waking up next to each other, every mood, every situation, every way you look. I don't mean to scare anyone who's single off. It's beautiful and wonderful. But it's different. It's not engagement. It's not dating. It's a serious commitment to being by each other's side every single moment, in every situation, in every mood. And we all get moody at times. And we all have our days when we're just not who we want to be and not at our best. When I'm dating, I can prepare to be my best. Even when I'm engaged to some degree. Suddenly it's 24/7. That's a whole new world. I remember I was once besad a kedushin by a young couple. Whenever I'm besad a kedushin, I meet with the chasana kala, of course, before prepare for the chasana, go through the entire chasana, try to bring out meaning and explain what every little minog and halacha we're going to do, as well as sit and have a whole shalom bayis class. I was going through the chasana with this particular couple, and the kala, she asked me, as we're going through the chuppah and what's going to happen to the chuppah, she said, is it okay if we exchange vows? I've never had that one before. You know, I've dealt with a lot in my life. It was new. It's okay if we exchange vows. And now this young woman, a wonderful young woman, mamish, very, very special. And she grew up irreligious. Her father actually was not Jewish. And that's what she knew of, right? That's what she. This is a young woman who grew up with a Christmas tree and a Hanukkah menorah. And to her, the weddings she's all been at, that was something very beautiful. And she wanted to know if it's okay if we could exchange vows. Very, very special woman. Imagine every detail was kedasu kedin, coming from such a background. She was a Grammy award-winning singer, actually. But okay, for another time. Lamaisa was difficult once when she was engaged. I took my son to a Knicks game. And we get to the Knicks game, and they announce to sing the national anthem, or whatever, Star-Spangled Banner, singing, you know, Grammy award-winning singer, and they announce the singer, and I'm like, I told my son, you know, Kolish, I got to walk out for this one. I'm going to be Masada Kedushin by Chasen in a couple months. So that was a little tricky. Baruch Hashem. So I told her, you know, we're not going to exchange vows. For various reasons, it's not so simple. Halachically, even though I'm all want to go for what a Chasen Kala wants in general, but this one was a little... And she was totally makabel, and I explained to her why, and I said, but I want you to know it's so beautiful. So beautiful you want it to do. Because what is it to exchange vows? Now, I don't know much about what the vows that are exchanged at most, but let's be real. We all remember once upon a time in some movie that we've seen, you know, through thick and thin, through chvestish, whatever they say, right? But what is that? That's a statement of commitment that we're gonna be in this through thick and thin. I'm by your side through whatever is going to happen. I'm committing. Not just engagement, not just for the fun times, not just for the enjoyable times. Whatever comes our way, I'm in. I'm dedicating myself, my life to you. Even when it's not going to be so much fun. Even when it's not going to be enjoyable. Even when I don't want to. I don't like doing dishes. I'm not talking about doing dishes. I like even putting them in the dishwasher. Like, I don't know, you guys, I just like... Girl, and I don't want to put on the gloves even. Like that also to me is just not. But you know what? I do it. I don't want to. I don't like it. But I know it's meaningful to help my wife and help in the house. To me, that's thick and thin. Okay, that's a very small example. That's not. But you understand. So I said, we're not going to actually exchange vows, but think it. Have those machshavos, because that's so beautiful. That's what marriage is. You got it. You got it. B'nai Yisrael came to Har Sinai, and they said Na'aseh v'nishma, and that's kedushin. That's engagement. That's I saw you, Rabbeinu Shalom, in the best of times. I saw you take care of me. I want in. I want this beautiful relationship. And the Rabbeinu Shalom looked at them and said, that's awesome, that's beautiful, I want it too. I'm by your side. But it has to be deeper than that. It's not enough the Kedushin, like the Baal Turim says, which was Na'aseh v'nishma, and the Torah being that document of Kedushin, Shtar Kedushin. We don't do it anymore. We use a ring, which is Shavah Kesef, the value of money. But there are three ways to get engaged, and one of them is Shtar, is a contract, is a document. That is the Torah, the Baal Turim says. But the Rabbeinu Shalom says, I want even deeper than that. I want to exchange those vows. Shavuos is a vow, is an oath. I want a commitment. I know there's going to be times in your life where you don't see me so clearly. There's going to be days in your life when you wake up and it's not in the Eilah of Yom Kippur where it's really easy to daven with Kavana. It's a random Tuesday afternoon and I have to daven Mincha. And I know there's days in your life where it's going to be a hot summer day and you have friends that are dressing a particular way, whatever might be, and whatever the challenge might be. I want our relationship to be one, not just of Kedushin, where it's easy, but of Nisuin. Commitment through thick and thin. And therefore the Hafla in Ksuvah says, you know what happened? Kafalem Harkigigas, think about this imagery. You know what Kafalem Harkigigas was? You know what it was to hold a mountain on top of each and every one of us at our Sinai? Why did the Rebbeinu Shem do that? We already accepted. We said Na'aseh v'nishma. You know what the Hafla says? You know what that mountain was? It was a chuppah. The Rebbeinu Shem held a chuppah on top of us. And he says, I want it to be not just Kedushin, I want it to be Nisuin. I want it to be, yeah, even, what does it mean I'm forcing you to not, meaning even when you don't want to, even when it's hard, even when it's difficult. Kafalim harkigigas. That's what I want it to be. In marriage, one needs that synthesis of Kedushin and Nisuin. One needs that love, that appreciation, that excitement, coupled with the times when we are just by each other's sides, no matter what is going on in our lives. Understanding, that's my commitment. But so too in our marriage with the Rabbeinu Shalom. Shavuos is that marriage. Shavuos is we revitalize that relationship where we say, I'm not just with you when it's enjoyable and easy. I'm with you, Rabbeinu Shalom, through thick and thin. Daily, with consistency. It's easy to be engaged. It's easy when everything's enjoyable. And I saw a mashal once. There was an individual. So someone saw this guy like looking all over the place. It was at night by a street corner. He says, "What's wrong? What's going on?" "I lost my wallet earlier today. So I'm looking for my wallet." He says, "Where'd you lose your wallet? Where was it? Where's the last place you saw it?" "Oh, about 2 blocks away." So he says, "About 2 blocks away? So why are you looking here?" "So here, oh, because there's street lamps here, so it's much easier to look." Just because it's easy doesn't mean you're going to find what you're looking for. Our marriage with the Ribbono Shel Olam is not just when it's enjoyable and beautiful, which is awesome. That's Kiddushin. It's Kafel HaGigigas. It's consistent. It's daily. It's a deep relationship. You know, in the early 1900s, in Yerushalayim, you know, we just had Yom Yerushalayim, we think about Yerushalayim, and a lot of us saw imagery of Yerushalayim over the last few days. Yerushalayim was full of poverty, like we can't imagine. One day, an individual walked into shul, and he put up a sign that he's inviting an entire kehila to a siyum. And he wrote, "It's going to be a siyum, mamish, fit for a king. Basar, v'dogim, meat, fish, you name it." When people saw this, they couldn't believe their eyes, because nobody had money. They hardly could afford any, the drop maybe of chicken for Shabbos, maybe. They thought it must be some very special siyum. He's finishing Chavis Neshano, finishing siyum Hashas for the 10th time, and he saved up for a long time. So someone asked this man, who wasn't himself, was a poor man. He says, what is the siyum? How are you making such a special siyum? What are you finishing?" He says, "Oh, I'm finishing Moed Katan. Moed Katan is one of the smallest mesechtas in Shas. Every siyum is very special. Any finishing of Torah is very special. But this is like, on a pedestal of mesechtas, it's like really small, guys. Like really. And that's what you're making this tremendous siyum?" He says, "I'll explain at the siyum, please come." He comes to the siyum, and it's packed, everyone's excited to eat like this. They've never ate like that, eaten like that in their lives. And they get to the siyum, and he starts explaining how he was a survivor of the Holocaust, like many of the Yidden were at that point. And he says, "I want you to know I was in the concentration camp. And there was this Yid Barrel. And everyone thought he was off. Like many happened, it was hard to stay sane. He was always mumbling to himself. Always mumbling to himself. And this Barrel would sleep on top of me in the barracks. You know, I was in the barrack with like 6 people, enough room for about 3. And he was on top of me. And even at night, I'd hear him mumbling, but we thought he was off. We let it be. A lot of people can't imagine what it was. None of us can imagine. One night, I'm sleeping, and sleep was the most precious commodity that one had in a concentration camp. It was the only time the entire day that you had peace, that you were away from the Gehenna Mal Aretz, not dealing with everything you've been through and were going through. So someone was asleep, no one would ever wake up someone sleeping. And this Barrel leans down and he starts shaking me and he wakes me up and I couldn't believe it. Why is he waking me up? And he says to me, "I want you to know I feel like I don't have much strength left in me. I don't know if I'm going to make it another night. And I want to tell you something. I know everybody thinks I'm crazy because I'm always mumbling. Let me explain to you what I'm mumbling. Before the war began, before they started torturing us, the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, I saw the writing on the wall. And I saw what it was going to be. And I said to myself, if I'm going to survive any day of this terror, I need Torah, and I need a relationship with Hashem throughout. But may come a time I'm not going to have Svarim, I'm not going to have a Gemara, I'm not going to have anything. So for a while, I just took one Masechta and I studied it over and over and over and over until I knew it by heart. So that no matter what, whatever they take from me, I'll always be able to learn that. And they can never take that Torah from me. You know, every day when I'm mumbling, when you hear me at night, when you see me in the streets and people make fun, I know how it is. I'm chazering Masechtas Moed Katan. That was a Masechta I learned by heart. And I feel that I'm not going to make it another night. And right now I'm up to Daf Yud again. And I feel that this was my Masechta that gave me such life. I can't leave it in the middle. Could you promise me, because I know you're going to survive. And if you do, could you promise me that you'll finish Moed Katan this time for me? And make a Siyam one day. For all my Moed Katans that I finished. And he says this at this Siyam, why he made such a special Siyam. Can you imagine this barrel? In the face of such rishis, in a concentration camp, chazering Moed Katan day in and day out, that was that Siyam. That wasn't Kedushin, that wasn't enjoyable. That wasn't when it's easy, when we send a guy or we send a young man, a young woman to yeshiva, to seminary, to live it up in Eretz Yisrael, everything taken care of, the most conducive environment in the holiest place in the world, sit and learn for a year, for 2 years. This was in a concentration camp, chazering over and over, my katan. That's nisuin. That's kafalim hakigigas. When it's not easy. When I may not want to, but I do. I was thinking yesterday, remember yesterday was Erev Rosh Chodesh Sivan, and there's a minhag Yisrael, I don't know how many he did here, to say a very special tefillah on behalf of our children. The tefillah of the Shlach HaKadosh. What we do for our children. I remember hearing once, I was thinking about this, is what it is to be committed. Heard from Rev Veli Mansour once. Veli Mansour is a special Rav in the Sephardic community. And he said that there was a family in his kehila. This woman, who all of her children were like tremendous Talmidei Chacham, Bnei Torah, became big Rabbanim. And she, again, I or he never would judge, and everybody teach their own, we all have to. She was a woman who wore jeans daily, but didn't seem to be so connected in the deepest of ways. And one day he went over to her and said to her, I just have to understand. How are you zoiche to such children? How are you zoiche? He couldn't understand how this could be. Again, he's a special person. He wasn't judging her in any way, and we don't judge. Everybody has to find their own ways. And listen, you'll understand in the story. He looks at her and he says, from the time my first child was born, every single Monday and Thursday, which are days of Eis Ratzon, I fast on behalf of my children. Every Monday and Thursday I fast for the hatzlacha of the success of my children. Imagine. The mentor was blown away. Fasting is not enjoyable. Nobody here looks forward to fasting. Everybody here, if you can have any kula to get out of fasting, that's very exciting. That's not one of the top mitzvahs up there that we love to do. That's far from it. Maybe we understand it somewhat and we could connect and we could. Tisha B'Av, Yom Kippur, let's be real. Out of those, let's be real. Nobody's excited to fast. To fast twice a week. Because you understand that maybe she, in her way, the ruchnias that comes from fasting and the giving up of the gashmias on behalf of her children, there are no words. There are no words to understand what that commitment could be for each and every one of us. And we all have it in our ways. I wasn't suggesting anybody here should take upon themselves to fast twice a week. You have to understand the message of what it is to be committed to the Ribbono Shel Olam. What it is to not just have the Kiddushin, but to have the Nesuin. Not just the fun and games, but a commitment, a relationship that's unwavering. And you know what's the commitment with the Rabbeinu Shalom in that marriage and that chasana that we're going to celebrate will be Yom Chasuna, so Zemat and Torah a few days from now. It's actually much deeper than even our marriages. It's more than everything we've discussed tonight. How so? Because the truth is, lo aleinu, none of us should ever know from it. In the marriage of Basar Adam, there is a parasha of Gerishin. Lo aleinu, none of us should ever know from such a thing. But it's a mitzvah in the Torah. In a certain predicament, if the relationship is not what it should be, so that commitment is to an extent. I mean, we say it as it is. There's a whole mesech that's given. There's a parasha of Gerishin. Divorce is something very real. Lo aleinu, none of us should know from it. We have the most beautiful marriages in the world. But in a marriage, there is that potential. So that commitment, as strong as it should be, through thick and thin, in some cases, again, God forbid, chas v'shalom, lo aleinu, there could be a parasha of Gerishin. The commitment with the Rabbeinu Shalom, the commitment each and every one of us will be taking upon ourselves again, this Matzah Shabbos Kodesh, this Sunday, this Monday, is even deeper than that. I'll show you where I learned this. It's a beautiful pasuk. You all know this pasuk, and it's a pasuk that's talking about the relationship between us and the Rabbeinu Shalom. It's another pasuk in Shir HaShirim, and it's often borrowed to discuss marriage. Pasuk of Ani L'Dodi V'Dodi Li, a pasuk that's much discussed at all time because of the Rashi Tevos El. I think it's just as much appropriate to right now. After all, Elul and Shavuos are very interconnected. If you know, as we're going to celebrate Kabbalah Sotor, but when did we ultimately receive the Luchos? It was Yom Kippur, it was after Elul, right? Ani L'Dodi V'Dodi Li, another pasuk from Sholem HaMelech in Shir HaShirim. So everyone here would translate those words as I am to my beloved and my beloved is to me, right? Everybody knows, very famous pasuk. I didn't need to translate that for anyone here. That being said, you ever think about it? Isn't it such a strange pasuk? If we didn't know this pasuk, it's hard to imagine that, but if you didn't know this pasuk, and we wanted to take from English into Hebrew, I am to my beloved and my beloved is to me, would anyone use those words? Be honest, be real. You're thinking them because you're used to them. What's the word for love? What's the word we all use for love? Ahava. No one talks about dodi. Unless you're using this pasuk, right? You know, you ever talk about anyone, about your husband, about your chassan, about a child, about anyone? Oh, this is my... I have such dodi. You have ahava. What is this word dodi? Why did Shlomo HaMelech, the wisest of human beings to ever grace this earth, why is he using such a strange lashon? Why dodi? So what else do we know about dodi? What else does dodi mean? Dodi is an uncle, right? Dodi is an uncle. And whenever you have in Hebrew, lashon HaKodesh, two words, there's a relationship between those words. Even if we use them in different contexts, and different meanings, there's a relationship between those words. So does the uncle have anything to do with this? So in life, there's two different types of relationships that are very, very deep, but very, very different. You can have blood relatives, a father, a mother, a child, a sibling, and you have marriage. Obviously, there are other types of relationships. Like if you take a bit, the seven close relatives we have, so you have blood relatives, and you have a relationship of marriage. And they both have milas and chasronos that are completely opposite. In a blood relative, the mila is, no matter what, you're always connected. No matter what, your brother is your brother, your sister, that doesn't necessarily mean that there's tremendous connection and love and closeness. Halavai, hopefully there should be. But by definition, it doesn't mean that just because you happen to be related. Unfortunately, we know of siblings that haven't spoken in 15 years. Yet they're still siblings. Because that's the nature of a blood relative. There's a connection there no matter what. It doesn't necessarily have to be very close and loving. A marriage, by definition, is tum fakeret, is just the opposite. A marriage, you're choosing that relationship. A marriage, you're deciding to want to be together. There's clearly love, there's clearly connection, there's clearly a relationship. But it's not necessarily always going to be there. There is, as we just explained, a parasha of gerushin. You can't divorce a sibling. You can't divorce a parent. You would never divorce a child. But married couples can. So each has a ma'al and chisar. This might sound strange, but halachically, who are the closest relatives that are allowed to marry each other? An uncle and a niece. An uncle and a niece are allowed to get married. People have a misconception. I think that was Mordechai and Esther. Read the pasuk explicitly. They were first cousins. But I think that, like, nursery mothers teach that because it sounds a little more natural, maybe. I don't know. But an uncle and niece can get married. Nechama Leibowitz, a tremendous woman. Many of us have learned her Torah and grown from her. She was married to her uncle. In our day and age, I don't know how that would go over in our world, but there was a time when that was something somewhat normal. And halachically, it's completely appropriate. And what happens when you have an uncle marrying a niece? When you have the closest blood relatives choosing to get married? You have a kesher with alamailas. You have a relationship of two people who have love and connection and want to be with each other, but are also blood relatives who have that commitment forever and never can disconnect. Shlomo HaMelech specifically, therefore, chooses the love between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu and utilizes that word of dod. Ani ledodi vedodi li. I am to my beloved is to me. That our relationship with the Ribbono Shel should be one with alamailas. Of course it should be so much full of passion and excitement. And when we're on fire in our learning, in our davening, in Shabbos Kodesh, in whatever that situation, on Yontiv, on... But even the days, the grueling regular days, when I might not be so excited to take out my sitter and daven or say tillim or whatever that challenge might be, I'm committed through thick and thin. I'm never disconnected from the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's the deepest of relationships. It's a relationship with Kedushin and Nisuin in one. Engagement and marriage in one. That's the Kof Mel HaGigigis. That's the mountain. The canopy, the chuppah. But how? Where's it going to come from? How can you have this relationship? Why would one enter in such a relationship? Why would you enter into a relationship where you're so committed even when you don't want to? Even when it's not enjoyable? Even when it's difficult? To have such consistency in one's avodas Hashem. Unwavering. So we have to understand. There's a pasuk we all know well in Tehillim. It comes up in our davening. Darshei Hashem lo yachzuru kol tov. Those who seek Hashem are not lacking anything. Darshei Hashem lo yachzuru kol tov. Are not lacking anything. Is that true? This is supposed to be by a bris Sunday morning. Very close Talmud to Talmidah. And they named the baby Rav. They named the baby Rav, that's what Shem will be, but they named him after Rav Yosef Shalom al Yashiv Zechus Adakash Farachah. They named the baby Yosef Shalom. Big shoes to fill. To live up to such a name of Rav Yashiv. The God Adar. Right, we all focus so much on Rav Chaim Knievsky recently. So Rav Chaim's father-in-law. Pillar of Torah. Pillar of the world. And I remember many, many times being in Rav Yashiv's apartment. I was in this apartment many times. Probably at least 25,000 by Rav Chaim also many, many times. In both of their apartments. We'll talk about Rav Yashiv's. Just tiny little apartment. You walked in to the right with a kitchen. Now, we all want nice, beautiful kitchens. And That's beautiful. You should all have and to make beautiful Shabbos sudas and Yom Tov sudas. His kitchen, I think maybe at most three people could stand in, and then nobody could move. Literally. It was like a droppable hallway on the right side behind these sliding doors. In front of that, you walked in and there was a little, basically, entrance room. It had a table and a few chairs and a little more space for standing. The kitchen to the right. In front of you was the bedroom. One bedroom, two beds, a little room for walking in between, one dresser, entire bedroom. And then there's a hallway going to the room in the back, which where he learned. You could go online, you could see videos of him learning there. That was a bigger room. That had a bed, a table. It was a normal size room. The walls were lined with svarim. And that was it. Remember when I was younger, I was looking around. He had no computer, no TV, I don't think he had a telephone even. Later in his life, they got him a little golf cart because it would take him to shul, drive him around the small little alleyways of Mea Sharm. They built an elevator for him later. His apartment was upstairs. A lot of the things that we enjoy in life, they weren't there. So what do you mean, Dorshi Hashem lo yachzur chol tov? When you seek God, when you're one with God, when you're one with Torah mitzvahs in the deepest of ways, you're lacking nothing. Rav Eliyahu Lapian explained with the following mashal. Imagine there was an individual who had an illness. As long as the individual took a particular medicine every single day, they were fine. They'd be able to live life to the fullest. No issues. And this individual goes into his friend's house one day, and he uses the bathroom, and he opens up the medicine cabinet. He's looking around, and he sees his friend doesn't have this medication. This medication that literally is life-saving to him day in and day out, his friend doesn't have. He comes out of the bathroom. He says to his friends, he's thinking how he could explain this, because, right, it's not the nicest of thing to open up from his medicine cabinet, sleeping around. He says, listen, I apologize, I know I shouldn't have, but I was in your medicine cabinet. I saw you don't have this medication. I feel so bad for you, I'm sorry, it's the most important medication in the world. I have so much, I'm going to go run home to bring you some, because how can you be without this? And his friend says to him, you silly, you fool. To you, that medicine is the most important thing in the world because you, unfortunately, are unwell. And in order to take care of yourself, you need to medicate yourself. Thank God I'm a healthy individual. I'm fine. I don't need that medication. That's why I don't have the medication. Dorshe Hashem lo yachzur chol tov. When you seek God, when you're connected to Torah mitzvos, when you have a real relationship with Hashem, a relationship with Hashem which is unwavering, a relationship with Hashem which is full of the excitement and the passion, and in the days when you don't have that, that commitment through thick and thin that we spoke about. Lo yachzur chol tov. You don't need any of the other things. All the materialism of life, all the luxuries of life, all that we run after to bring pleasure, I don't need any of it. All of that is self-medication to bring me happiness. Dorshe Hashem lo yachzur chol tov. I have it all. And if we understood that we have it all, I'm willing to dedicate myself to it. Even when it doesn't make that much sense. Even when it's hard. Even when I'm not into it. Because I understand that it's the most special thing in the world. As the pasuk says, it's yikara himipninim. It's more precious than diamonds. It's nechamadim yizavim yifazrav. It's more precious than gold and the sweetest honey. It's when we realize that and we understood that. We understood Torah and mitzvahs, a relationship with Hashem, davening on a Tuesday afternoon, even when I have so many other responsibilities, is more precious than anything else in the world. How could I not commit to it? You know, there's a Gemara. The Gemara in Horio says that Yikarei Mikninim. It's more precious than gems. It says it's referring to the gems of the Kohen Gadol. You know, on the Choshen, right? The Ephod. Once I saw a question, it says, why does the Gemara tell us that? Just leave it as Pashup Shah. It's more precious than gems. That does enough for us, right? We all like gems. Gems are cool. We'd like, you know, Yantiv is coming. We'd like to remind our husbands, Simchas Yantiv. Gems. Yikari Mibinim. That does enough to tell me how precious Torah is. Then the gemstones of the Kangadol. Gold is precious. Gemstones are precious. Diamonds are precious. But let's be real. Would we compare that taken in place in Makom to Eretz Yisrael? But a schus, whenever we have the schus to be in Eretz Yisrael, to go visit Eretz Yisrael, spend time in Yisrael, we know we're on fire. We're so alive. There's nothing like it. And in Eretz Yisrael, where's the holiest, most special place in Eretz Yisrael? Yerushalayim Eir Kodesh, right? Yerushalayim of all the cities. We love all the cities, Hebron and Tzfat and Tveria and wherever it might be, but everywhere in Eretz Yisrael is special. But Yerushalayim, I'm so excited to be back home this past November when I was finally back in Eretz Yisrael after being far away for way too long. Cried mamish for 2 years straight to get back to Eretz Yisrael. The moment when I saw the Kaisel for the first time, I'll never forget it my whole life, how special it was. It was one of the most emotional moments of my life. Every time you get down, just get back to your soul and just to kiss the ground of your soul. But then Yerushalayim, and then in Yerushalayim, when you get closer to the old city, and the old city, you get to the Kaisel, but you know the Kaisel, that's the closest we could daven, but really, what's the holiest place? It's the Kodesh Kodesh of Har HaBayis. My most special place in the world, there's a yeshiva, some of the chevra knows, that I go to a yeshiva in the Muslim quarter, and you go up into the top roof of this, you're directly opposite Har HaBayis, looking down on Har HaBayis. That's where I go to daven. I can't explain to you what it is from davening there. As usually most, in Mirzim this year, finally be Zohar to be back. The last couple of years, COVID and everything, I wasn't able to be. Usually I go to Eretz Yisrael for Yom Kippur, and I prepare on Erev Yom Kippur. I go to that makom, and I just listen to Seder Avoda by Yishai Ribo, watching the makom where it happened and will happen again. I can't explain to you what that is. And on Har HaBayis, the most holy of all Har HaBayis is Kodesh Kedosh. Right? The makom of the Kodesh Kedosh. And then in people. All people are special. Every person in this world could be special. But then we believe we're the Am Nivchar. There's something special about being part of the Am Nivchar, being a princess and a prince. And then within our nation, we have levels, and whatever this means exactly, we believe there are Yisraelim, but then there are Levim and there are Kohanim. And with the Kohanim, there's a Kohen Gadol. And Kohen Gadol is the holiest person in the world on some level, whatever that means. And one time a year, because in days as well, every day could be special, right? Every day could be a special day. If I learn and I daven, I can elevate every day. But then we have Shabbos Kodesh, which is Kodesh Mamish, so special, how we look forward to Shabbos. And we have Yontif. But there's one day a year, Shabbos, on Yom HaKippur. So you have the Mokum of Kodesh Kedoshim, the holiest place in the world. Yom Kippur, the holiest day of the year. The Kohen Gadol, in the Kodesh Kedoshim, on Yom Kippur. Can you imagine what that moment is? Right, that's why that song is so special. How can you not just cry every time you hear Seder Avodah? I don't know how many of us were together last Thursday night listening to Yishai David together in Arthur Hashem, but anyways. You know what the Gemara in Horus is saying? That when he talks about the Kohen Gadol and the gems of the Kohen Gadol, it's a reference to the Kohen Gadol and the holiest time and the holiest place. And it's telling us, you know what it means, Yikari Pneinim? Don't think Torah is just more precious than gemstones. Torah is even more precious than that. What we just described, Torah is more precious than that. That's a time, that's a place. That's something that's a given. That's there. But when I decide to connect to Torah, I decide to connect to the Rabban Shem through the Torah and a commitment of not just engagement, but marriage. Most precious thing in the world. Most precious thing in the world. And that's what we're going to go through again. That marriage, that Matan Torah, that Kabbal Torah again, Amir Hashem, this Matan Shabbos Kodesh. You know, recently I was remembering about 8 years ago, it was a very special chasana. I was talking to the father of the Kal about this last week. Talmud of mine, Avi Jacobs, married his wife, Rachel Huberfeld. Nechasana, it was about 8 years ago, I don't remember exactly. Nechasana was in the Waldorf Astoria. Very beautiful. You can imagine how gorgeous this chasana was. Of the most beautiful chasanas I've been to in my life. And the Masada Kedushin at the chasana was Rabbi Yisroel Meir Lau Shlita. I believe then was still the chief rabbi of Israel. Now his son, we know, is the chief rabbi of Israel. Yisroel Meir Lau is Kodesh Kedoshim. He's one of the holiest Jews in the world. Yisroel Meir Lau, we all know, is a Holocaust survivor. Grandfather Liberator. Yisroel Meir Lau. And he came to be Masada Kedushin. He was close. I don't remember which of the families or both of the families. And I had this chus to be under the chuppah with Rav Lau standing right next to him. I was one of the edim there. And two of the grandfathers at this chasana in the Waldorf Astoria were Holocaust survivors. Picture this scene. And I'm standing right next to Rav Lau. And Rav Lau, I don't know if he was asked or he on his own, he took the mic and he started speaking. Now, in general, I don't know. You could have your opinions whether a chuppah is a time for a speech, not a time for speech. It's definitely not a time for a long speech, but Rav Lau took the mic. And he looked at the two grandfathers, one on each, one of the chasan and one of the kala. And he himself, a Holocaust survivor, a Kaddish Dikiyid. I believe he was 8 years old in Buchenwald. And he looked at the two of them and he said to them, if I would have told you 70 years ago that we would be together 70 years from now in the Waldorf Astoria at the chasana of your grandchildren, what would you have thought then? You would have told me I'm not dreaming. I mean, it's the biggest sheker that you've ever heard in your life. But here we are. At your grandchildren's chasam. And we've persevered. And we've built. There wasn't a dry eye in the place, you could imagine. So I was discussing this with the Kala's father last week, but then this past Sunday, it was the first time in 8 years that I had the same feeling that I had underneath that chuppah. And I'm still feeling it. I'm still trembling from that chuppah, and I felt it again this past Sunday. This past Sunday, family that I'm very, very close to. Debbie and David Seltzer, they wrote a Sefer Torah. They wrote a Sefer Torah. And they made a very small Hachnasa Sefer Torah just for their family. They have the biggest chus in the world that my family is part of their family. Not biologically, but deeper than that. So we're at the Hachnasa Sefer Torah, which is in their backyard. And they wrote this Torah, this beautiful Torah, in honor of Debbie's father, and mother of Avishalom, Bad L'Chaim. Another way, obviously. His father. Father, Bez Hashem, should live and be well. He's 94 years old. Pipa. And her father, who's 94, is there with his children, with his grandchildren, with his great-grandchildren. And the father who was in Siberia, the father who lived through the Holocaust. And I can't explain to you, again, the feelings of emotion watching this. A father who a few months ago, the doctors gave days to live and had a miraculous recovery, which I deeply believe was because of this Torah that Debbie and David pushed through at that time, even while they were going through this. If you've persevered through Siberia and the Holocaust, you can persevere through an illness that the doctors have no hope. And Debbie's brother got up and said to his father, if someone would have said to you in Siberia, if someone would have said to you during the Holocaust through the Gehenna that you all told us about, that in 70 years, 75 years, whatever, you'll be at Achnasa Sefer Torah in your honor with your children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, Shomrei Torah Mitzvahs. You wouldn't have believed this. Same line. And I had the same feeling of what it is to be a Yid. And how do we have these occasions? How do we have the people that went through that animal heart and rebuilt for us? It's because they were deeply connected to Torah. Deeply connected to Hashem. Not just Kedushin. Not just in the good times. Not just in when it's enjoyable and fun. But with the commitment of Nisuin, with the commitment of through thick and thin. No matter what happens. Even through the Gehenna of the Holocaust. Which we can't understand and never will understand. Maybe Beyom Ahu. So if they could and taught us this, and here we have two stories that I had the schus to be at, that I had the schus to live through, that I had the schus to be inspired by. But what were the stories? It was the story of marriage and the story of a commitment to Torah, Achlas Dever Torah. And that's the commitment that we're going to have again. And then we're going to relive again. And we're going to live through again this Matzei Shabbos Kodesh. The Yantav of Shavuos HaBalein Latova. So Bez Hashem is Baruch, each and every one of us. Should understand what we're looking forward to. Just like that Rebbe we started with, was his heart was beating faster. We should now have our heart beating faster. Feeling the motions and the excitement to revisit that time and rededicate ourselves to Rabbeinu Shalom through thick and thin in the enjoyable times as well, of course. And have that marriage with the Rabbeinu Shalom. That unwavering marriage with no ani l'doidi v'doidi li. You know what's going to be? When we finally give ourselves over in such a way? See, I didn't finish that Gemara that we started with. The Pasuk says, you, Nashim Tzikanias, go and see Shlomo HaMelech, the crown that his mother made for him. On the day of his chasna, we said that's Kabbalah Satorah, that's Zumat and Torah. Will be Yom Simchas Libo. The Gemara, the Mishnah continues. It's maybe one leads to the next. When we have Yom Chasunaso, when Matan Torah is a chasana, when Matan Torah for each and every one of us is that commitment in the deepest of ways, and we'll be Zoyche the Yom Simchas Libo as well. We'll be Zoyche the Binyan Beis HaMikdash. And what is Binyan Beis HaMikdash? I know it's so hard for us to even comprehend. None of us have seen it, none of us have envisioned. It's a time of peace, a time of love, a time where all the suffering is gone. Even that alone, the Yom Simchas Libo, Muzoicha, the Gula Shleima, Mishnah Sokeinu, Mheira, Bimeinu, Mashav, a beautiful Yantav, Mirz Hashem, Muzoicha, only Simcha and Bracha.